Welcome to the podcast of Media Matters with Bob McChesney, a weekly show on media from WILL Radio. Visit us at WILL.UIUC.edu.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL. AM 580, this Sunday, April 2nd, 2006, intermittently soggy and beautiful day in the heartland of the country. Today, our guest is an old friend of mine and one of the leading journalists in the United States today, editor of the Progressive magazine, which is one of the leading voices for peace and social justice in the country, Matthew Rothschild. Matt, welcome to Media Matters.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I guess we should let everyone know in the listening audience that Matt Rothschild will be in Champaign-Urbana this Friday, giving a public talk at 4 p.m. in 319 Gregory Hall on grounds for impeachment, the case for impeaching George W. Bush, and some of the politics behind impeachment in the United States today. That's 319 Gregory Hall, 4 p.m. this Friday, April 7th here in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Matt, you've been writing a lot on your blog and at the website for The Progressive, which is simply progressive.org, about impeachment. What's the case?
Well, I think the case is really strong. I mean, if you look back and see what Bill Clinton was impeached for and compare that to what George W. Bush is doing, I mean, it's just laughable because Clinton's was a crime that involved his own personal integrity. Bush has committed a crime against our system of government, a crime against the Constitution. And the founders, after all, when they drew up Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, the one that talks about impeachment, Bob, they talked about treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors. This isn't treason or bribery. And originally, they just wanted to have it be treason or bribery. But one of the founders, George Mason, who was governor of Virginia, he said, look, there can be a lot of things outside the two umbrellas of bribery and treason, things that actually subvert the Constitution. And so he and Madison and Jefferson and Hamilton seized on the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors to cover activities that would subvert the Constitution. And that's what Bush has been doing. He's been subverting the Constitution, I think, in four major ways. And there are other incidents of lawbreaking by Bush. But the four that I'm concentrating on are, first and foremost, the Iraq War. Not only did he illegally go into war, but his deceptions were actually effectively a fraud against the American public. He was engaged in a giant conspiracy to commit fraud against the public and the Congress and the Constitution there. And so that's one ground. The second ground is the way that he has been holding people here in the United States and abroad. And the third one related to that is the torture scandal. And finally, maybe the most blatant one of all is this National Security Agency scandal, the wiretapping scandal.
Wait, Matt, can you back up? What was number two again? I'm trying to get this down.
Yeah, the second one is just detentions, detainees of people in the United States and abroad. I mean, he detained U.S. citizens Yasser Hamdi and Jose Padilla without a charge, U.S. citizens without access to the courts, in solitary confinement for a year and a half or 2 years. He detained more than 1,000 Muslims and Arabs in this country, some for months at a time without access to the courts. And then the thousands of people that he has held overseas, 14,000 in Iraq alone, but the CIA has squirreled away people who, according to James Risen of the New York Times in his book State of War, the CIA is never going to release these people. They're going to hold them until they die. And that is so blatantly against international law. So that's the second ground. And, you know, we don't focus a lot of attention on that in this country because the NSA spying scandal is so more obvious. But in a heinous way, if you're looking on heinous grounds, the detentions, the mass detentions of people without access to any court anywhere indefinitely certainly ranks up there.
Now, if you go down this list of four, are these things that other presidents have done and gotten away with in the past so Bush could say, hey, look, this is just the way the game's played?
Well, some have gotten away with detentions. Of course, you've got Roosevelt with the Japanese-American detentions in the concentration camps in World War II. But the combination of, yeah, I don't think any president has done so many blatantly illegal things as George W. Bush. I mean, an illegal war, an undeclared war, a war that's against the United Nations charter, even according to Kofi Annan, and then to say there's a law on the books against domestic spying and I'm not going to follow the law. I mean, John Dean of Watergate fame said that's the first time that a president has admitted to an impeachable offense.
Well, going back to this violating the UN Charter and international law, what does that have to do? The impeachment's about, you know, crimes against the Constitution, right? It doesn't say anything about the UN Charter.
And the real stickler there is Article 6 of the Constitution, Bob, that says treaties are the supreme law of the land. And the UN Charter is a treaty. And so by violating that treaty and by violating the Geneva Conventions and the Convention Against Torture on the torture grounds, Bush is violating Article 6 of the Constitution. So, I mean, that does get to a constitutional violation. I mean, you can't have a president saying what treaties he's going to abide by, what laws he's going to abide by. I mean, that's a different kind of system than the one the founders drew up.
Now, on this fourth point you raise about the NSA spying scandal, where Bush administration has admitted that they've been spying in an unauthorized manner, quite against the letter of the law, on American citizens. The argument that Bush and his defenders have been making is that this is necessary for the president to be effective in this war on terrorism, that there's not time to call up some judge and go through some massive bureaucracy when you're really trying to, like, ferret out some phone call someone who's going to try to blow up a city with an atomic bomb. How credible do you think that argument is?
Well, it is incredible because the law itself, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, gave the president 14 days at the start of a war where he didn't need to go to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, the FISA court, and gives him anyway retroactivity for 72 hours any time he can say there's this emergency and he doesn't have time to go to a court and get a warrant. So if, say, today, he said Osama bin Laden is on the line somewhere and he's got to go wiretap that call coming into some U.S. citizen somewhere, he can go do it, and then, you know, on Tuesday he can go to the court and say, look, I have to tap this line. So the idea that they need to violate the law in emergency situations is disproven by the fact that the law gave them a way to do that kind of wiretapping in emergency situations.
If the law gave the Bush administration this ability, why didn't they just follow the law then?
Well, that's a real good question, Bob. I've been thinking about it, too, because also the FISA court has been granting 99.97% of all applications for warrants from the Bush administration. So you got to ask yourself, just as you did to me, what is going on here? And I think there are two things. One, the Bush administration probably wanted to gather information that was so broad, so intrusive, so unrelated, except perhaps tangentially to terrorism, and maybe some political spying, we don't know, that they figured the court was going to reject that application, and they really wanted to do it, so they say we'll do it anyway. But there's a larger, more ideological reason at play here, and that is Bush and Cheney especially and Rumsfeld, they don't believe that they should have to answer to anybody in the way the president exercises his powers as commander-in-chief, or just generally his powers. And so they kind of feel it's a nuisance to have to abide by going to this court, and they want to do whatever they want. So that's what they're doing, whatever they want.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, the monthly magazine coming out of Madison, Wisconsin, for approaching 100 years now, going back to the Progressive era and its founder, Robert La Follette, the legendary governor and senator from the state of Wisconsin. Matt Rothschild is going to be in town in Urbana-Champaign this Friday, speaking to the public on grounds for impeachment. You've been listening to him now at 4 p.m. in room 319 in Gregory Hall. Also, there will be a benefit for Matt Rothschild Friday night, not for Matt personally, but for the Progressive Magazine. And if you're interested in learning about that, go to the Progressive's website, progressive.org, and click on the talk in Champaign-Urbana, and there'll be details about the fundraiser benefit for the Progressive Magazine Friday night, if that's something that interests you. If you'd like to call in with questions or comments for Matt Rothschild, the phone number here, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking right now about the grounds for impeachment, the case for impeaching George W. Bush. We'll also be talking later in the show about the war in Iraq in more detail, the upcoming prospective war in Iran, the state of the Democratic Party, anything to do with politics. Matt Rothschild is one of the most astute commentators and observers of politics in the United States going around today. Matt, let's follow up some more on the issue of impeachment. You say the case is vastly stronger and more important against George W. Bush than it was against Bill Clinton. Yet, you know, the Bill Clinton thing went to the House and then later to the Senate, nearly came close to a conviction. This case in the Senate has not even gotten to a censor with any support. What's the story here?
Well, the censure thing that Russ Feingold has raised, and he's my senator up here, and I think he's doing a courageous job by raising that issue. He has said that this NSA spying scandal is right in the strike zone of impeachment, but he figures it'll be easier to get a censure vote than an impeachment vote through, but it hasn't been very easy for him.
For listeners who might not be familiar with these terms, what is the difference between censure and impeachment?
Well, censure really has no effect. It's just a slap on the wrist. It's just a resolution passed by Congress that says the President of the United States has been a naughty boy. Mm-hmm. Whereas impeachment, he gets kicked out of office if the Senate convicts.
Mm-hmm.
So censure is actually a very weak thing in comparison to impeachment. And the amazing thing about Feingold's censure resolution is he's only gotten two co-sponsors, Senator Harkin of Iowa and Barbara Boxer of California. All the other Democrats have been running away from it. Even, you know, staunch liberals like Ted Kennedy couldn't sign on yet, which is crazy. A lot of these very same senators signed on to the idea of censuring Bill Clinton. I mean, if they were prepared to censure Bill Clinton, why in the world aren't they prepared to censure George W. Bush?
Yeah, why is that? What's your assessment of what accounts for this?
Well, it's politics. In the first case with Clinton, they thought that this would be a way to forestall impeachment, so let's settle for censure. On this, they're worried that the Republicans are going to say anyone who votes to censure George W. Bush is in league with the terrorists. You know, the terrorist card is the only card they've got left, and they pull it out, this tattered old card, at every opportunity. But Democrats are worried that they'll be facing that accusation, and rather than stand down that accusation, they're running away from the censure resolution.
What's your sense? You've been writing about this as much as anyone now, and what's the sort of feedback you're getting? Granted, it's not going to be a cross-section necessarily of all Americans, but do you sense that this is an issue, if the Democrats did pursue it and say, look, the law is the law, we've got to stand for principle, that the American people would be so deeply offended that it would cost the Democrats politically in the fall elections?
Oh, I don't think so. I think on politics alone, I think a majority of the American people are with Russ Feingold on this and with an idea of moving forward with impeachment proceedings, because I saw a Zogby poll that said 53% of the American people would be in favor of impeaching Bush if it could be demonstrated that he lied to the American people on the way to dragging us into war, and I think that's easy to demonstrate. And secondly, 52% said if he illegally spied, could be proven that he illegally spied on U.S. citizens here at home, that they'd be in favor of impeachment. And I saw a poll that said 46% were in favor of censure and only 43% opposed. And then just impressionistically from traveling around the country, and I've been in places that aren't exactly hotbeds of radicalism like Omaha, Nebraska, or Bradenton, Florida, the home of Catherine Harris, who helped throw the 2000 election to George W. Bush. I've been giving talks on impeachment there and people are just jamming into the halls or in the cafes where I'm speaking. It's not because of me, it's because of the issue. People who are appalled at what George W. Bush has done to this country over the last 5 years, they want this guy to be held to account, whether that's censure or impeachment. I don't think people really care too much about that, but they want some accountability. Even John Stewart said he was in favor of Feingold's censure resolution because it was a measure of accountability.
You know, Matt Rothschild, I had a friend over for dinner last night as a professor in the history department here, and he just mentioned in passing how, you know, there's really an obligation on a political party like the Democrats, especially an opposition party, to hold, you know, to uphold the Constitution, isn't there? I mean, isn't there really like a moment of truth now for the Democratic Party? Certainly the Republicans, too, should be held to the same standard.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Actually, I think, Bob, that it really isn't a Democrat-Republican thing. It should be a bipartisan respect for the Constitution. And then as far as Congress goes, there should be some institutional self-respect, because what George W. Bush is doing is trying to lop off the other two branches of government. So he's on the only branch left. I mean, he wants to disobey the judiciary, and he doesn't want to follow Congress. So if you're a Republican who reveres the institution of the Senate or of the House, and you see a president who's saying, I don't care if you guys pass a law, I'm not going to follow it, I would think they'd have some sense of dignity to fight that. But I'm not seeing many Republicans, any for that matter, saying that Bush is worthy of censure or impeachment.
We're talking to Matt Rothschild today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live from Campbell Hall at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champain here on April 2nd, 2006. If you'd like to call in with a question for Matt, the number 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We have a full bank of callers, and I promise I'll get to all of you. Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, which can be seen online, too, at progressive.org, will be in Champaign-Urbana this Friday, 4 p.m., giving a public talk called Grounds for Impeachment, a critical analysis of the Bush record and what it means for U.S. politics. 4 p.m. This Friday, 319 Gregory Hall, right there on Wright Street in the heart of Champaign-Urbana. And there will be a fundraiser for the Progressive Magazine that night. And if you go to progressive.org and click on the talk information for the talk on Friday, you'll see what you need to do. If you're interested in meeting Matt personally and hanging out with him Friday night, he will be in town. Let's go to the phone lines if we can right now to get some of our patient callers. Line 1, Champaign, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild of the Progressive.
Your guest is blatantly leftist. This is a program very similar to those put on by your NPR station in Madison, Wisconsin. I would like to know what WILL program is planned to put on the other side of this. You're slanted. Your questioning is very slanted. And I'd like to hear just what guest and who will present it. I would like a reasonable interviewer such as David Inch to put on such a program. Would you let me know what you plan? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, caller. Now, I'm not really in a position to address what the station's going to do or what NPR is going to do, and I don't think anyone here can address what NPR is going to do. Matt Rothschild, let me ask you, though. You've been following the impeachment case, and you've been making your arguments. How do you think the press coverage has been of these issues compared, say, to the Clinton debacle and impeachment case in 98-99? And how specifically, to your knowledge, do you think NPR stations have done and NPR has done in covering this story?
Well, I don't know. I listen to NPR up here in Madison, Wisconsin, pretty often, and I don't hear a lot on impeachment itself. Maybe it comes up on a Friday Week in Review show where they have a spokesperson for Democrats or spokesperson for Republicans or a right-winger and a left-winger. I don't see NPR promoting the cause. I certainly don't see the mainstream media giving sufficient attention to impeachment when you see the polls are so there's so much support for impeachment. And then
on that point, at the parallel moment, say, in early 1998, were the polls similarly inclined to see that Clinton impeached, or is it roughly similar in terms of public?
No, actually, people never wanted Clinton impeached. That was the kicker. I mean, it was always, according to my recollection, about 60-65% opposed to impeachment. But you had right-wingers in control of Congress, and they were the ones who were pushing it. The demand for impeachment was not bubbling up from below. It was hatched in the halls of Congress, mostly in Ken Starr's little legal office, too.
Well, why aren't the Washington Post, the New York Times, all the sort of stalwarts of freedom of the press in this country, the great newspapers, why aren't they saying, hey, we got to stand up for this Constitution and push this forward? Because the New York Times has, for example, editorialized on each of those points to some extent on the negligence of the Bush administration. Why haven't they gone the next step and sort of stepped forward and said, we've got to push this, even if the Democrats don't want to?
Well, I think for two reasons. One, there's a real paternalism on the part of the mainstream media gatekeepers like the New York Times or the Washington Post. I remember back to the Reagan-Contra scandal where Katherine Graham, the publisher of the Washington Post, said the country can't stand another impeachment crisis following Nixon, and so we're not going to be calling for impeachment. It was her determination that us little boys and girls out here in the countryside just can't stand to see impeachment, even though it was warranted. And I think a similar thing is happening now. They're making the judgment that somehow it would be bad for the country or bad for the country because it's time of war. Or from a liberal media perspective, they're thinking, well, maybe it'll be bad for the Democrats because this will excite the Republican base, and it's not time to do that. Actually, the New York Times on March the 17th ran one of its most ridiculous editorials in recent memory that it was entitled Time for Facts, Not Resolutions. And it was basically one long scold of Senator Russ Feingold for having the temerity to introduce a censure resolution. And they said, look, the right wing is being very effective with their counterattack on this, and so essentially you shouldn't go forward with it. And the other point they said was legislators should, you know, do what they do best, which is investigate, as opposed to, what, defend the Constitution by doing their constitutional duty and drawing up bills of impeachment? That's the kind of thing that just drives me crazy.
We're listening to Matt Rothschild today, my guest on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Champaign County, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a digression for a moment. My grandfather was a charter member to the Progressive from Southern Illinois. I wish you'd give me the volume 1, number 1, but I guess it's lost in history. But
We still have volume 1, number 1.
Well, no, I meant his, I wish you'd given me his copies.
Oh, it might be worth something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just like to have it because I remember it. Don't know if you caught Feingold on Fox News this morning with Mike Wallace's son. I forget his first name.
Wallace. No, I missed him.
Yeah, he was on, and I thought he did a great job with a fairly antagonistic interview, as one might imagine. He pointed out that Leahy, and I watched the judiciary hearing this week as well, on Friday, which was convenient because they knew there would be even less Democrats there because they had the excuse of saying they had to make some constituency engagement back home or something, I suppose. But Leahy is actually quite sympathetic to censure now. He hasn't put his name on, and Leahy said that in the hearing as well. But I wanted to get to your comments and what you've been tracking on the Lindsey Graham at the hearing said that, you know, that you can't compare this to Watergate because Nixon was investigating his political enemies, and it wasn't about national security, quote unquote. But we don't know what's been going on. Actually, there's glimmers of evidence that there was a lot of investigation of peace groups, basically this military intelligence 902, I guess, division. It's kind of been caught doing this. There was a campaign inside the National Guard to promote information synchronization offices, whatever that means. That would be also a more legal way, supposedly, to investigate peace groups. And that the head of the National Guard in California lost his position over the scandal about that. But we don't hear a lot of that. And this seems to me it's the telltale signs that probably there's a fairly widespread use of any means necessary to investigate political enemies, but they keep saying that that's not the case. I understand from a journalist named Jason Leopold that Cheney was actually unanonymizing NSA reports even before 9-1-1, and we have the history of Bolton also playing loose with NSA reports on when he was using it inside of their own administration. It's astonishing that people can assert that no political enemies are being investigated without having any idea what's going on. I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks for letting me.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Matt, you've written a lot about civil liberties. I mean, I think I wouldn't go this far to say, but it's almost a singular concern of the Progressive and yourself, the whole status of civil liberties in the United States, not just recently, but historically.
Oh, yeah, civil liberties and anti-war, anti-corporate power, those have been with us for more than 9 decades at the Progressive, and I have been following it. The caller made two really good comments. First, on Leahy, he has been sympathetic to censure. He hasn't signed on. One reason he's sympathetic is 5 or 6 or 7 townships in Vermont have passed resolutions calling for impeachment. So I would encourage people to take this issue to their local towns and cities. On the civil liberties issue, the caller is absolutely right. We have no way of knowing whether Bush is using the NSA or other agencies to spy on his political opponents. But I think it's sufficiently bad that he's saying he's not going to obey the law, and I don't know why that isn't bad enough for Lindsey Graham. But I think, sadly, what we have to conclude from all the reporting I've been doing on civil liberties violations over the last 5 years, that every law enforcement agency in the country, from the lowliest campus police to the sheriffs to the state National Guard, all the way up to the Pentagon spying, as the caller said, to the National Guard spying, to the NSA, to the FBI, to the CIA, they're all spying. Some of it is illegal, like this NSA spying. some of it is legal because under the Bush administration, they have lifted the guidelines that used to say to the FBI and other law enforcement agencies that you need probable cause of a crime being committed before you can go, you know, film a protester or infiltrate a group. But now they can do it at will.
Matt, let's say, hypothetically, that George W. Bush was impeached and convicted by the Senate and thrown out of office. Then we have President Dick Cheney. Do we then launch the second impeachment proceedings immediately thereafter? How does this work?
Yeah, I would think they need to be impeached together because Article 2, Section 4 provides for the impeachment of the president and the vice president. And Dick Cheney has been involved in every single one of these law-breaking operations that George W. Bush has been involved in. And to some extent, really to make sense of what's been going on, I think we need to construe what we have going on right now is the second term of the Cheney administration rather than the second Bush administration because Cheney is that powerful.
Then who takes over if the both of them go down?
And then it is Speaker Hastert.
That's exciting.
But it would be, I mean, rather than thinking of who is next, Bob, I think the better way to look at it is what the effect would be, not as far as succession, but as far as a chastening of the imperial presidency and granting more respect to the system that our founders created. And so I think if Bush and Cheney were impeached, the next person, Dennis Hastert, would not be so fast and loose with the law. And that's the situation we need to get to. We need to return to democracy or the forms of democracy because these guys are taking it away from us. I mean, they are so power hungry, so drunk with power. I call them megalochaniacs. I mean, these guys are just out of control.
We're talking to Matt Rothschild today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580. Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine. You can learn about it if you're not a subscriber, don't read it, at simply the website progressive.org, where Matt Rothschild has a regular blog that he updates, coverage of all sorts of political issues. It's a very valuable website. Matt Rothschild will be in Urbana this Friday, April 7th, talking about politics and impeachment at 319 Gregory Hall, free, open to the public speech at 4 p.m. I hope you'll be able to make it. If you go to the website progressive.org and click on the right-hand column where it mentions that talk, there's information also for a fundraiser for the Progressive that's Friday night. If that interests you, you can learn about it at progressive.org. The number here, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. We've got some upcoming shows, I think, that will interest you 2 weeks from today. Our guest will be Larry Lessig, the Stanford Law professor, one of the great experts on the future of the Internet. 3 weeks from today, Howard Zinn, a columnist for The Progressive, the legendary historian, will be our guest. It'll be a great honor to have him with us. In early May, we have Janine Jackson from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting on the air with us as well. So those are some terrific upcoming shows. I hope you'll be able to join us. Let's go back to the phone lines now if we can. Line 4, Farina, thank you very much for your patience. You're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Hi, Matt Rothschild, and you too, Bob. Thanks very much for this great show and this great guest. Where to start on all this? Personally, when the torture thing came out, I was so devastated that the American people hadn't had enough right at that point, just on that very point. But how do we, there's so many of us want these guys impeached, how do we do something about it? And I appreciate what you said about going to the cities and towns, but we don't even know how to do that. And then on the point of recall, you know, that's another issue. And basically, how do we get the ball rolling? And
how do we make this an issue?
The other thing, I'm sorry, the rest of these crimes that they should be incarcerated for, that was the major thing. And the whole group of them, and they need to be incarcerated for the purpose of the future so that other people don't think that they can do these horrible crimes against humanity. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much. And Matt, if I can just add in here, go to her very first point, which we haven't talked about, I think, as much as some of the other issues in your four counts, which she raises, the whole question of torture. And I don't think this is a subject our media has been especially eager to talk about, nor any of our politicians on either side of the aisle. But you mentioned as one of your four counts. Maybe elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I mean, what Bush has been doing since 9/11. On the night of 9/11, he told his staff, according to Richard Clark, that we're going to go kick some ass, and I don't care what the international lawyers say. That was a sign that Bush was going to not abide by the Geneva Conventions. And he actually admitted that he wasn't going to apply the Geneva Conventions to people from the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And under the Geneva Conventions, there is no exception. There is no group that is exempted from some form of humanitarian protection. But Bush unilaterally exempted them. He also, according to James Risen's book, told Tenet, when Tenet had an Al-Qaeda operative.
The CIA head.
Yeah, George Tenet, former head of the CIA. And Tenet was telling Bush about this. The guy was sick. They weren't able to interrogate him further because the medicine still hadn't kicked in yet. And Bush allegedly, reportedly told Cheney, why are we having him on medicine in the first place? And so from the very top, you had the President of the United States disdaining respect for humanitarian treatment of prisoners.
And, but wait, Matt, just for the sake of discussion,
yeah.
How much, you know, we're fighting this war on terror. How much can we obey these sort of goody-two-shoes rules that from 1945? I mean, you know, when we're fighting people who have nuclear weapons, might want to blow up cities.
Well, yeah, I mean, and everyone uses the ticking time bomb kind of scenario. They know where the next attack is coming. But almost everyone who has studied this issue, and Al McCoy, a professor here at the University of Wisconsin, has just written a book on this subject of torture, has concluded that that ticking time bomb scenario is false because it's almost never happens that all those circumstances, they know where that bomb is, you get him in time, and they're going to tell you if you just apply a little bit of electrodes or use a knife like they do on that show 24 on Fox, that the guy will all of a sudden cough up the information. That rarely happens. Rather, under torture, more likely, someone's going to say whatever you want. In fact, in one of the tortures that the U.S. was involved in, I think it was in Afghanistan, though, it may have been at Guantanamo, one of the prisoners said, I am Osama bin Laden. You know, they were willing to say just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very unreliable, the information you get out of torture. And on the flip side, the consequence of violating the norms of behavior are what we've seen with this Abu Ghraib scandal. It so disgraces the United States' reputation abroad, and it fuels terrorism. It's used, a lot of that Abu Ghraib footage, as a recruiting video for Al-Qaeda. So I think even on the practical matter, the idea of flouting the laws, and there is a U.S. law against torture, there is a U.S. law against war crimes and the conventions that the United States has signed, I think the idea of doing that is faulty on every ground.
Now, what about this process is called rendering, where we send prisoners against their will to other countries that work them over?
Yeah, this is something, again, that Bush reportedly gave the green light to George Tenet of the CIA shortly after 9/11. The CIA could go somewhere, seize someone that they suspected to be part of Al-Qaeda, and then send them to a third country that is notorious for torture. And this is also blatantly against the Geneva Conventions. And
now, is this actually taking place, or is this just in theory?
It has been taking place, and they call them renderings, or and that's it's just another euphemism for kidnapping someone and sending them to a place that's being tortured. The defense from Condoleezza Rice and Gonzalez, the attorney general, is, oh, yes, we do send them to third countries, but those third countries assure us that they're not going to be tortured there. I mean, this is just a ridiculous wink and an elbow.
They're not sending them to Sweden, I take it.
No, they're not going to Sweden. They're going to Egypt. They're going to Syria. They're going to other countries.
Uzbekistan.
Other countries that have specialized in these dark arts.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine. Go to progressive.org if you want to learn more about the Progressive and read a lot of the commentary that Matt Rothschild puts up there. He has written a lot on impeachment, the case against the Bush administration, and we've been talking about a lot this show, but Matt Rothschild writes at length about a number of other important issues, including the upcoming prospective war in Iran. There's so much more we could talk about, and we've got a full bank of phone calls, so let's get back to the phones right now. Line one, Kankakee, thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Hello, Matt Rothschild.
Hey.
The United States need not be too concerned that there's not a lot of support for a resolution of censure of the president. There are strong constitutional arguments against censure resolutions in cases like this. The proper action would be the adoption of articles of impeachment by the House of Representatives. The Senate's job will be to try the impeachment. Would not the people do well to elect this November a House of Representatives which is inclined to impeach and to elect that one-third of the Senate which would be then ready to fairly try the impeachment? Is this not the question upon which the November elections should be decided and the thing which the people can do? Thank you.
Thank you. Matt, what do you think?
Well, I favor impeachment over censure, as the caller does. I don't endorse candidates. The Progressive's a nonprofit. I do think if the Democrats were to gain hold of the House, however, just as a predictor, what would happen then is John Conyers would become head of the House Judiciary Committee. And John Conyers has already introduced a bill to explore grounds for impeachment that now, I think at last count, Bob, has 33 co-sponsors. So I think that would push things along.
And then Matt Rothschild, again, will be in Urbana this Friday, April 7th, speaking at 4 p.m. at 319 Gregory Hall, free, open to the public on grounds for impeachment. There will be a lengthy Q&A afterwards. So people interested in hearing what Matt Rothschild has to talk about, interested in learning more about the Progressive magazine, please come out Friday, April 7th, 319 Gregory Hall, here on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Let's go back to the phone lines now. We again have several callers patiently waiting. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Yeah, if I could ask a question apart from the impeachment issue. I don't get to read the Progressive very often. I was wondering if what happened to stopping the idea that I was just curious if you could tell me in the Progressive, did you attack the idea that we're in a war in the first place? Because it seems to me that if we're stamping out terrorism, we're essentially making a declaration of war on the poor. The last time this country confronted a force more powerful than our own, we were accused of terrorism. Whatever happened to that issue? And I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thank you very much, caller.
Well, I mean, Bush uses this idea that we're at war to grant himself all sorts of powers that he's not entitled to. And he also exaggerates the threat against us. Now, he acts like this is the worst threat that the United States has ever faced. And you could go to whitehouse.gov and just write in the word oceans, because in a lot of speeches he says, before 9/11, oceans protected us. After 9/11, we realized suddenly oceans don't protect us. Well, that's an idiotic thing to say, because oceans didn't protect us in 1812, and they didn't protect us at Pearl Harbor. They never protected us during the Cold War, when the Soviet Union could have launched an ICBM that would have gotten here in 15 minutes. So you have to ask yourself, why is he saying something so silly? Because his speechwriter knows that they want to make it out like before 9/11 you were safe. After 9/11, you've never been in more peril, so give George W. Bush all the power he wants, and I think we need to resist that.
Matt, how effective would you say the Bush administration has been in quashing the terrorists, the al-Qaeda, the threat of terrorism in the United States? I mean, you know, history will judge him at some point, but looking at the record since 9/11 or throughout his administration, do you think, aside from his breaking the Constitution periodically or international law, that, you know, he's done a bang-up job of protecting us from terrorism?
Well, Bob, I think one of the reasons he's going to go down in history as the worst president we've ever had is that he's been such a bad commander-in-chief. And I think military historians are going to look back at the Afghanistan war and look back in Tora Bora and say what a colossal error he made there when he had Osama bin Laden dead to rights and basically outsourced it to the Pakistani military, who were always working with Osama bin Laden anyway. So that's one thing. The second thing is this Iraq war. Even the CIA has concluded that the Iraq war has served to strengthen the forces of al-Qaeda. First of all, it diverted resources of the U.S. military and intelligence from getting Osama bin Laden to this hunt for the phantom weapons of mass destruction, then a hunt for Saddam Hussein. But also by invading another Muslim country, it fed the propaganda that Osama bin Laden was issuing. Basically, Bush has been playing the part that Osama bin Laden has scripted for the United States over the last 10 years.
Now, what about in Afghanistan? We didn't catch bin Laden, but we did put a democracy in there with full equal rights for women, right?
Well, I just talked with a woman who was a member of the parliament in Afghanistan, Malala Joya, and she says that basically there is a new Taliban, or the cousins of the Taliban are running the country, that there is no effective essential freedom for women, especially as you get outside Kabul, and that it's really been a disaster ultimately. So I think the idea that Afghanistan is the shining success, we see the Taliban regrouping in parts of Afghanistan and attacking U.S. soldiers even now.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines and take some of our more patient callers. Line 3, Terre Haute, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild of The Progressive.
Hi. I'd like to touch again on the idea of using an intelligence or a security apparatus to investigate one's political opponents. Maybe my memory serves me incorrectly, but when Tom DeLay pulled his first Texas two-step redistricting thing, and the representatives left the state to prevent a quorum, did not the National Republican Party use new powers that they had been granted post 9/11 to investigate these representatives' travel itineraries? Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. Matt, do you know the answer to that?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that Tom DeLay, you know, unlawfully got the FAA to track down where some of these Democrats were in Oklahoma for his narrow purposes, but I don't know about the extra powers after 9/11.
What, you know, speaking of Tom DeLay and speaking of some of the Republican Party hierarchy, what is your sense of where the Republicans stand at this point in view of all the scandals they've been facing?
Well, they're really weak. This Jack Abramoff scandal, the Tom DeLay scandal, is a terrible embarrassment for the Republicans. And if the Democrats can't gain ground at a time like this, I mean, really, they should hang it up because, they essentially can't sell popcorn at the movie theater if they can't gain seats in November.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines here. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine.
I'd like to make 2 points. Impeachment is a waste of time. There's very little chance of impeachment proceedings with the president during time of war. Secondly, it reminds me of the Clinton legal problems he had. He was forced to fight a domestic rearguard action for his indiscretions with his intern in the White House when he could have been focusing on foreign problems and might have even spotted Osama bin Laden. But, of course, he was diverted, and I think this would be a dangerous diversion to the president at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So time of war, is that a sufficient ground to say maybe just have to hold off until the war is over before we deal with impeachment?
Well, I appreciate the caller's feeling on that, but some of the founders at the Constitutional Convention said a time of war is not an excuse to suspend impeachable proceedings. And I don't think it's a waste of time ever to stand up for the Constitution and the separation of powers. And I really don't see the comparison between Clinton and Bush. I mean, Clinton, as the caller said, had indiscretions with an intern. Bush has had indiscretions with the Constitution.
We're talking to Matt Rothschild today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Come to you live from WILL AM 580 on April 2nd, 2006. Phone lines are now open. We have time for another caller or two at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Matt Rothschild will be in Champaign-Urbana this Friday at 4 p.m. April 7th in 319 Gregory Hall talking about grounds for impeachment and talking about politics today in the United States. And if you want to learn more about that event and a later event he'll be doing later that evening, go to progressive.org, the Progressive's website, and you can click on the information on that talk and learn more about what Matt will be up to while he's in town that weekend. Matt, before we go back to the phone lines, I want to just quickly give you a chance to talk about some work you've been doing on the U.S. relationship with Iran and what you foresee coming down the road.
Yeah, unfortunately, as irrational, as foolish, as crazy, as bloody, as costly as it would be for George W. Bush to go bomb another Muslim country, I think he is going to bomb Iran before the November elections because I think it will help him politically, or he thinks it will help him and the Republicans politically, and also because I think he believes that God is talking to him in one ear and Cheney's talking to him in the other, and they're both saying, go bomb Iran.
I mean, you think it'll be driven largely by or significantly by domestic political concerns?
I do think the timing will be driven by that, but I think he would not want to leave the presidency without trying to, you know, rid the world of evil. And that's, he believes he has a messianic mission to do that. And so we're going through really the same charade we went through on the lead up to the Iraq war. And it amazes me that there isn't more hue and cry about this because, you know, now Bush is saying we're going to try diplomacy. Well, he said that before. You know, diplomacy is just the first course on Bush's war menu. I mean, this is just a charade. It was a charade before with Iraq going to the UN, and it's a charade now.
Well, fortunately, after our news media sort of confessed that they sort of laid an egg calling the Bush administration into account for the claims leading into the Iraq war, we can be assured that they will be very careful not to make the same mistake again. Is that right?
Well, I would wish that were the case, Bob, but I just think the media tend to fall in line, and the president of the United States, especially on foreign policy issues, acts like the assignment editor, and the media don't ask the tough questions because they are cowardly. They don't want to rock the boat too much, as Elizabeth Buemiller said of the New York Times when asked why she didn't ask Bush a tough question at a press conference before the Iraq war. And there's this weird combination, nasty combination of patriotism and capitalism that prevents reporters and even anchors like Dan Rather, who said he would have been necklaced if he'd asked the tough questions leading up to the Iraq war. Necklaced is a metaphor from South Africa days where they'd put a tire around your neck, fill it with gasoline, and light a match and burn you alive. Dan Rather said he'd be burned alive if he'd asked the tough questions. And they don't want to ask the tough questions. The owners don't want them to ask the tough questions because they'll be perceived, the station, the network will be perceived as unpatriotic. And when it's perceived as unpatriotic, there might be a boycott. They'll lose advertising revenue. They'll lose money. And the owners of these media outlets aren't in it to give us the news. They're in it to make money.
We're talking to Matt Rothschild today on Media Matters. We have a full bank of phone callers, so I'm going to try to get to all of you, but you're going to have to make your comments or questions extremely brief, if you would, please. Line one, cell phone, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out, the last caller pointed out that if we impeached Bush, that he would be focused on that and not be able to do his job. And I would think that that is the best reason to impeach him, so that he would focus on that and not be able to do all the other things he's doing in the world.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, caller. Matt, what do you say to that argument?
Well, I just second that comment.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Line two, Shelbyville, you're on with Matt Rothschild of the Progressive.
Right. Well, you guys, I think you're absolutely right. And I've just finished President Carter's new book. He's saying exactly what you're saying. When I finished, I thought about John Denver and the song, I'm Proud to Be an American. And I don't know anyone who has read this could say that.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, that leads to an interesting point, Matt. Who are the public figures? You've mentioned John Dean.
John Denver.
John Denver, the singer, but I was talking Matt now. Who are the public figures, Matt Rothschild, who have stepped forward to take sort of a stand on principle, in your opinion, on this impeachment issue?
Well, there's Russ Feingold, there's John Conyers, there's Tom Harkin, there's Barbara Boxer, there's Barbara Lee from California.
Well, not just elected officials. I mean, just general sort of like people like Jimmy Carter or John Dean.
Jimmy Carter is a great example. There's Bill Moyers, Walter Cronkite, I think, have both been speaking up on this. I think it really is time for people who have a following in this country in whatever field they're in to really speak up, to rise to this occasion.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines again. Line 3, Urbana, you're on the air with Matt Rothschild.
Yes, I just want to suggest that we are at war. We need to stop the war, but I think American presence needs to be there. So I'm wondering what would happen if our soldiers put down their guns and they picked up shovels and pitchforks and telephone poles and started rebuilding Iraq. They would not be protected with guns, but they would be protected with morality or whatever else.
Well, thank you very much, Colin. Now, Matt, we only have a couple minutes left, and that's a very big question, but can you briefly give some sense of what you think the United States' appropriate course would be in Iraq today?
Yeah, I think the United States has got to pull out of Iraq within 6 months, that the United States is one of the causes of the violence in Iraq, and the longer the United States stays there, the more that there will be members joining the insurgency. And I think at some point, the people of Iraq have got to solve this problem themselves, and the United States is not in a good position to solve it for them. You know, a pyromaniac is not a good firefighter, and Bush has proven to be a pyromaniac here.
Okay, we have time now for our final caller. Line 4, Farina, our hotbed of Media Matters listeners. back with another call from Matt Rothschild.
Hi, it's Hi from the hotbed.
Okay.
One of your interesting callers earlier did slightly mention recall, like they did to Gray Davis in California. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, the recall is not an option. I mean, for the constitutional, the only constitutional tool we have at our disposal is impeachment. You can do, as Feingold is suggesting, a censure resolution, which essentially has no effect. It's just a you were a bad boy, don't do it again. But impeachment is what the Constitution provides, and I think that's where we should go.
Matt, well, let me just close. Next week we're probably going to have Kaz from the Daily Kaz on as our guest, and he's sort of one of the people who's making the blogosphere argument that this is going to really push our political environment to a much more progressive future because people get much more involved and keep the media and the politicians accountable. What's your sense of the blogosphere? You're a blogger now. Do you think they're going to be in a position to sort of to push these stories and these issues forward and give citizens the power to really affect change?
I do, and they're breaking the stranglehold of the mainstream media, which is all to the good. So they're not only the nation's unpaid fact checkers, but they're also bringing stories to the attention of people, either ultimately in the mainstream media or just by bypassing the mainstream media. So I think it's been a great development, actually.
Have they been able to actually change the media, mainstream media itself, to force stories into the coverage that would have been there otherwise?
Yeah, I think they were involved in pointing out that this Bush appointee had been shoplifting or had a bad some other Bush appointee had bad resumes, you know, issues like that that they have really kicked to the fore. And politically, they're a movement that needs, they're part of a movement that is new and different and exciting.
I want to thank Matt Rothschild for being our guest today on Media Matters. Matt Rothschild will be in Urbana speaking this Friday, April 7th, 319 Gregory Hall. 4 p.m. Free event on grounds for impeachment. So come here, Matt, speak if you're interested in what you've heard today. The Progressive Magazine, the venerable Progressive 90, approaching 100 years old. You can learn more about it at progressive.org. Matt Rothschild, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Bob, it's been my pleasure.
See you on Friday. And I want to thank Andrew Boyle, my producer, Brett Polson, the technical director. My name is Bob McChesney. I'll see you all in 167 hours.